My name's James Litton, and I'll be presenting work that I completed at the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems in the University of Maryland. To explain lightweight contexts, let's start with something that we all know, the process. Processes have files, credentials, and memory mapping, threads, and system attributes like execution priority. If a user wants to have two units of computation that differ in these respects, they must create a new process by forking. This imposes scheduling and coordination overhead between processes, so many applications choose performance over isolation to limit their forking. We offer an alternative to this approach by providing a new abstraction, the lightweight context. Lightweight contexts further subdivide a process by offering a new unit of isolation and privilege separation that lives within a process. An LWC contains many of the same elements as a process, but critically does not include threads. By construction, every process begins with the root LWC. This does not differ from a traditional process in any respect until we add the ability to create and manipulate new contexts within a process. Our work provides tools to do just that. Additionally, we explored some of the common uses of this abstraction and its utility in production software. Before we discuss that, though, let's dive into the API. We begin with creation. In this visualization, we remove any extraneous state and just show the address space of each LWC. As before, each LWC has separate credentials and files from one another, and they are all operating within a single address space. We assume a single thread and show the evolution of the LWC state from the top down. To get an idea of this representation, we'll show an mmap call that modifies the address space. LWCreate allows for a thread to create a new LWC that is templated off of the existing one. By default, the new LWC is a copy of the current one. Here, we show the child coming into existence at the time of the create call. All of the regions in its memory map are copied from its parent. It's not shown here, but this is true of its credentials, file table, and program counter. Note that no additional thread has been created. Alternatively, we can pass a specification to the create call to alter this behavior. For example, we can specify that some regions are copies. Here, visualize this orange regions in the child. Or we can specify that some regions are shared with the parent, which are here visualized as purple regions in the child. Other regions may be specified as unmapped. So once we have two or more LWCs, how do we switch between them? We begin with two LWCs, and again, we assume one thread in the process. Once the current thread calls LWSwitch and specifies the child as the target, the view of the thread atomically changes so that it instead has access to the resources of the target LWC, for example, the target's virtual memory. Once the switch is complete, the thread begins executing in the target context, in this case, by returning from the LWCreate call in the child context. If the child calls switch with the root as its target, execution yields in the child context and resumes where it left off in the parent. This follows coroutine semantics. In addition to creating and switching LWCs, we have three other API calls that we describe in the paper. The restrict and overlay calls allow for dynamically specifying resource sharing between LWCs. This is in contrast to the sharing of resources specified at creation time. In the paper, we describe some additional permissions associated with these calls. LWSysCall allows a thread in one LWC to make a system call on behalf of another. We'll go over that by example a little later on. In a web server, session isolation amounts to serving each client with an isolated address space. We use LWCs to provide in-process session isolation to Apache and Nginx. Another use is for sensitive data isolation to help mitigate the damage caused by bugs like Heartbleed. In the paper, we provide in-process isolation of SSL process keys, or private keys, rather. Snapshots let us take the state as it exists at some point in time and roll back to it later. I will discuss how to achieve this with LWCs in a few minutes, and later on, we'll see that we can use this to jump forward in time as well. And finally, reference monitors. These allow for more privileged application or context to monitor the execution of another and potentially refuse or modify its system accesses. I will show how to provide an in-process reference monitor with LWCs, but first, let's discuss snapshots. The goal here is to provide a snapshot and rollback function on top of LWCs with simple semantics. In user space, the snapshot function returns a descriptor. Calling rollback with that descriptor causes the snapshot function to return again with the program in the state it was in when the snapshot was first taken. We have pseudocode on the left-hand side, but mostly we're going to focus on the LWC calls on the right. We'll start in an LWC that we'll refer to as the active LWC, and we're now ready to take a snapshot. When we call lwcreate, this will create a copy of our current state, which we retain as our snapshot. The snapshot LWC is inert because no thread is associated with the newly created LWC. The snapshot function will ultimately return the snapshot LWC descriptor. Now that the program has exited the snapshot function, it may run and modify the state of the active LWC. This is isolated from the snapshot state. Eventually, we may find that we want to roll back to our previous state. Once we want to roll back, we call LWSwitch to yield to the snapshot LWC. At this point, the snapshot LWC will clean up the previously active LWC before it assumes that role itself. Now that we've restored the snapshot, we can return from the snapshot function and resume execution. But first, we take a new snapshot for future rollback. Now that we have a new LWC that retains the snapshot state, we may return its descriptor, and the rest of the program's execution may resume in the active LWC until a future rollback occurs. So with that said, let's move on into our reference monitor example. Here, we can exploit the privilege separation that LWCs provide within a process to provide in-process reference monitoring with good performance characteristics. We'll do a quick run-through of the pattern to achieve this now. The basic idea is that some initial portion of this program's execution trace is trusted, and within that portion, it creates an untrusted context. The trusted context then enters a monitor function to monitor the system calls of any child LWCs. Any children are unable to perform system calls without the monitor's permission. We begin by creating a new LWC. The root LWC will be our trusted context, and it will monitor the application LWC. The monitor is now set up, and it switches to allow the application to proceed. It's important to note that the application LWC was created with the LWC sys-trap flag. This means that any system calls that are prohibited in the application LWC will transparently trap to the monitor as an LWSwitch. Here, the application enters a sandbox so that its system calls will trap into the monitor. Now, whenever the application makes a system call, execution yields to the monitor. The monitor has the ability to execute a system call on behalf of the application. For details on this call, see the paper. And finally, the monitor switches back to the application. The system call on the application will return with parameters passed to it by the monitor. Now that you have some idea of how LWCs work, I'd like to discuss our evaluation. In the paper, we evaluate LWCs in a number of different contexts. We won't have time to explore all of them, but I'm excited to share our Nginx and PHP results, which I think were surprising. But first, let's go through a few microbenchmarks. Creating an LWC performs much of the same operations as fork, but no new process or thread is created, and there's no additional interaction with the scheduler. Creating and destroying an LWC costs about 90 microseconds. Because the pages are copy on write, there was no measurable correlation between creation time and the amount of memory allocated to the process. Instead, creation time is proportional to the number of pages studied during an LWC's lifetime. We found this to be approximately 3.4 microseconds on average per page studied. We expect that for most applications, a child LWC will study only a small proportion of its pages. Now let's go into switching cost. We compare the cost of switching LWCs within a process to switching exclusive access to a resource with processes and kernel threads. These are represented on the x-axis. The y-axis is the number of microseconds per switch. LWCs do not have to enter the kernel scheduler or acquire access to a mutex or semaphore. The coroutine semantics that we use makes exclusive access to a resource implicit. Process and kernel threads have similar times here because they both essentially hit the same path in the kernel. Now let's move on to Nginx. Nginx is a high-performance web server that serves each client from a single thread per process. We modify Nginx to use LWCs to provide session isolation, which we'll describe now. We begin with a set of socket descriptors. This includes the socket listening for new connections. Nginx has an event loop that waits for a descriptor in the descriptor set to be ready. That is to say that the desired operation won't block. If the socket is ready, it accepts a new client, and both the accept and client descriptor go back into the descriptor set. If a client socket is ready, the server attempts to serve the request. If at any point the client would block, the descriptor returns to the descriptor set. Eventually, the server will close the client when finished. Now, this is how Nginx currently operates, and it's important to note that this all happens in a single address space with a single thread on a single stack. There's no isolation between clients. But the result of this is that this tends to run very efficiently. Now, suppose we wanted to add session isolation to this. As it turns out, we can do this with LWCs without modifying the architecture. First, we create a new LWC for each client accepted. The LWC we created will only be used for the client that we just accepted. As before, both the client and listening socket return to the descriptor set. Now, when we next find ourselves needing to serve a client, we switch into the LWC that we created for it. The client is served in this context, which we switch out of before returning to the event loop. This context may run with reduced privileges and has memory isolation from the rest of the server, which runs in a separate LWC. If we wanted to modify things further to monitor the disk I/O of the server, for instance, we could add another LWC during program initialization to reference monitor the system calls of the system. We, in fact, did this for Nginx, and now we're going to talk about how it affected its performance. In our evaluation, we had 300 concurrent connections, each requesting 45-byte documents. On the x-axis, we have the session length, the number of requests each client made to the server. On the y-axis, we have the number of GET requests satisfied per second. Not surprisingly, Nginx can serve more requests as the session length increases because the cost of initiating a new connection is amortized over the session length. Nginx performs well, reaching about 180,000 requests per second. This dwarfs our best Apache configuration, which topped out at about 70,000 requests per second. So what happens when we add isolation to such a well-tuned web server? Not much, as it turns out. Nginx with session isolation had comparable performance to stock Nginx. We then wondered what would happen if we also added reference monitoring. Our monitor intercepts all system calls and performs them on behalf of the child context. Its cost is also insignificant. This is a strong result, but perhaps 300 concurrent clients is too few. So for that reason, in the paper, we looked at this in more depth and found that LWC scaled well with many concurrent clients. Next, we're going to go ahead and talk about PHP, speeding up PHP. We exposed the LWC snapshot facility as a function within PHP and used this to jumpstart its computation. Let's see how that works. We begin with how PHP interprets a script. First, a request comes in and the runtime starts up and parses the environment. The environment will include things like the current request time as well as data passed along with the user, such as UID equals Bob. This data is stored in memory somewhere and is accessed by the runtime when needed later on. Now, PHP compiles the source page and executes it. Each source page may include other source pages, which are themselves compiled and executed. This goes on until the request is finished. Because the cost of compilation can be high and the results should not vary, PHP includes an opcode cache to cache the results of compilation. The important thing to note here is that so long as execute is running, PHP is chewing through your script, and whenever it needs to, it pulls data from the environment. At some point, the script may call our exposed snapshot function. From the script's point of view, this function just returns and execution resumes. But within the system, this creates a snapshot at the current URL and puts it in a snapshot pool. For subsequent requests, after they parse the environment and put their environmental data in memory, if the URL matches a cached result, we restore the snapshot. This effectively caches the computation, resuming execution at the point LWC snap was previously called. We added this call to the root page of the default Xen MVC application before any user-specific code was executed. Let's see how much that helped. On the x-axis is whether or not PHP used the snapshot facility. Stock PHP on the left did not, and LWC PHP on the right did. The y-axis is the number of requests per second we were able to complete. We found that in either case, LWC snapshots provided a significant increase in throughput. It's interesting to note that this optimization was applied to a significant PHP application framework upon which any number of applications could be built, such as blog software and content management systems. We expect that they would also benefit from this facility. And that brings us to the end. To briefly summarize, LWCs provide a new OS abstraction that provides for greater ease in separating software components at minimal cost. In addition to introducing the abstraction, we evaluated the performance, showing low overhead, and demonstrated cases where this facility could even be used to optimize production software. I'd like to thank my co-authors for all of their invaluable contributions and thank the audience for being here today. I'll take questions now.
Is there a reason why you have to recreate the snapshot every time here as opposed to simply recycling the original LWC?
Yeah, the main idea here is we need to always have that sort of pristine state. And so we create a copy of that state and we keep it around. And then when we're ready to restore to it, we jump into that state and we've gotten rid of the old state. So now we need the pristine state again. So we essentially fork off of that before we've re-dirtied it. So you always have one kind of clean copy around.
But couldn't you just maintain the clean copy and keep reusing it?
Well, you could, except the way that something copies itself is you enter it and then it calls LW create.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Okay, I'm Yitong from Sanjiang University. I have a question considered about the TLB. During a context switch between different LWC, I think you should not flush your TLB, right? So I assume that you have a different PCID for each lightweight context. But I'm wondering, we let occupy more TLB entries because for different LWC, there will be many shared memories, but you may occupy different TLB entry.
So the question is just about the TLB in general. Just correct me if I don't answer your question. But the main thing is we use address-based identifiers in the process. So this allows us to switch LWCs without flushing the TLB, and that's important. And the core operating system uses this as well in FreeBSD 11. There is some additional TLB entries. That's true, and there's probably some tricks we can employ with global tags and stuff like that that we don't do now, and I'd be sort of interested in looking into that in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Yong Zhen from Huawei. A question regarding the reference monitor. So, many system cores have address as parameters, but your different LWC have a different address space. So for the reference monitor to work, one LWC have to access address, but since you have a different address space, so this can cause a problem. But of course, you can have shared memory, but excessive use of shared memory may defeat the purpose of isolation. So how do you solve the problem?
Yeah, that's correct. And there's two ways to handle this. So in the one case, you could load the reference monitor in a small region of memory and then create the child and leave that unmapped and have all the child's memory shared with the parent. And that's with disjoint spaces, and that works well and is efficient. The other thing you can do is we have this overlay call that allows you to import memory from one LWC into another. And there's a permissions associated with that so that it can't be abused to violate security assumptions.
Sudarshan, Wisconsin Madison. So can LWCs be used as a master and worker configuration? And if so, if they can be used, because you are using a tagged TLB, and whatever work that a worker does, so it the master will not be able to access both the TLBs and the cache entries. That's the work done by the worker. How do you solve this problem?
So, I mean, I'm not entirely sure if I understand your question, but I think it's sort of what happens when these things are working together. And one of the primary uses here is isolation. So for the most part, some pages they touch will be in common, but if we're using isolation, they probably have different workflows, and we probably don't actually want to share that exactly. When we do, we'd use shared memory, and in that case, you'd be okay with your TLB. Entries.
Yeah, but because you are tagging the TLBs, right? There is a master LWC and there is a child LWC. And they have different PIDs and they have different, the TLBs are tagged. So because the TLBs are tagged, because the processor always accesses the cache and the TLB in parallel, all the cache entries will be also invalid for the master whenever it's accessing the child thread. So.
No, I understand your question. That's right. If you have shared memory with two of these things, they will take an additional space in the TLB cache. In our evaluation, we didn't have a problem with that, mostly because our isolation tries to minimize the regions that are shared. But that is something that you would have to address.
Rajesh from Facebook. It's a really interesting work, and I found the Nginx example very compelling. With the processing of the web request, what kind of do you have any sense of like memory limits or having each of the lightweight contexts be much more scoped in what amount of memory, CPU or disk or any kind of like resource constraints that you can do on the threads? And can you guarantee that a faults or any kind of like a segmentation fault or something like that can be effectively sandboxed in that? In that context.
So one of the things you might notice is that a single LWC could just, you know, run in a loop or something and basically deny service to the rest. So there is some sort of cooperative element to that. And that sort of relates to faults. I mean, we talk about how we handle signals in the paper, which would include faults. In the case of a seg fault, the LWC that's responsible for that seg fault would receive it. And then they could bring down the application. So we sort of, you can deny service, you just can't kind of cheat and look into the other guy's address space.
I see. Thank you.